Something must be in the air. So I'd like to begin with the custom of the three excellences, the Tibetan Buddhist custom, where good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. So the first good beginning is to check our motivation, and we do the refuge and bodhicitta prayer. If you don't know it, that's fine, just hum along. Refuge kind of ensures us that we stay on the right path, and we don't detour towards the smoky lights. And bodhicitta is the spirit of awakening, the altruistic motivation that we're here to, on behalf of all limitless sentient beings, to hopefully be able to help them. So we generate bodhicitta for that. And then the good in the middle is during the session, we try to keep a ultimate view that ultimately there really is no subject, object, and act. Everything is like a dream. There's no independent, inherent existence. But rather we appear like rainbows or like mirages. And this ensures us from grasping and solidification, so to speak. And then the good in the end is the dedication. So I'm going to start with the good beginning. This will be in Tibetan.
Sanjay Chidam Sabhi Chagnam La Tantir Bhardi Dhani Kapsichi Kagi Jinso Dipe Sunam Ki Nurla Pinchir Sanjay Dhirbhar Sho Sanjay Chidam Sabhi Chagnam La Tantir Bhardi Dhani Kapsichi Kagi Jinso Dipe Sunam Ki Nurla Pinchir Sanjay Dhirbhar Sho Sanjay Chidam Sakhi Chagnam La Changchu Bhardi Dagni Gyatsu Chi Yagi Jinso Gipe Sunam Ki Rula Pinchu Sanjay Dhrupar Sho.
Was actually Ron Songtsen's idea in a discussion group on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. When he mentioned the Tibetan Book of the Dead, I cringed a little bit because it's not an easy read, as you may know, those who've read it. And But on the other hand, I started thinking about it, and it's considered a terma, Tibetan treasure text. So by going deeper into this text, maybe we can really discover something and why it has lasted for so many centuries. So we know that it was discovered in Tibet in the 14th century by the treasure finder Karma Lingpa, and found in what are known as the Gampo Hills, which is where Gampopa had his monastery. And termas, or treasure texts, are the writings or the teachings of Padmasambhava given in the 8th century. And they were kept and hidden in various ways. And this is an earth treasure, meaning that it was actually tangible and discovered. Sometimes it takes a while to decipher them. So it's quite interesting, the history. It's unusual. So in a way, it's kind of interesting also that it was 700 years after in Tibet that it was discovered. So we're talking about the 1300s before America was discovered. Discovered. And then another 700 years goes by, eventually ends up in America in a strange way, having been very popular and an integral part of Tibetan culture during that 700 years. So we may have heard that the first translation came out like in the 20s by Lama Kazidawa Sundrup, edited by Evans Wentz. And Lama Kazidawa Sundrup is a Sikkimese Lama, is actually a relative of Lama Tsongkhsen. So we all have this connection here. Edited by Evans Wentz, colorful character, who, it's a little bit controversial. Some of his commentaries are said to be not very accurate by today's standards. He was heavily influenced by theosophists and Hindus background, and he kind of went off on his own a little bit in those commentaries. But I don't know if any of you have read the Evans Wentz versions. They were popular in the 60s. I read one or two and got very excited about it. I couldn't tell the difference.
Okay.
You know, if he was, Evans Wentz would say, for example, you know, in his commentaries, become one with the eternal universal consciousness. You know, he would throw out words like that, which actually are considered almost heresy by some Buddhist philosophers. But anyway, the book, Tibetan Book of the Dead, is something that he coined. Mm. It's actually not called that. The text that he took out was part of the whole cycle of teachings, of Karma Lingpa's, the Bardo teachings, and it was one chapter. And it's called Liberation Through Hearing, the Bardo Tudral. Bardo Tudral.
Liberation Through Hearing.
Through Hearing, yes. Yeah. But he coined it the Tibetan Book of the Dead because he was, at the time, interested in the Egyptian Book of the Dead and thought there were parallels. There was some, that was real popular in the 20s, too. And so that became a very popular also, the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And the phrase stuck to the point where today even the Dalai Lama refers to it as the Tibetan Book of the Dead. They just sort of decided to go with the flow. But the actual cycle of teachings that it came from is really called the Peaceful and Wrathful, a profound sacred teaching entitled Natural Liberation Through Recognition of Enlightened Intention. That's the long title. Or the short title is Karling Shitro, Karma Lingpo's Peaceful and Wrathful. Mm. And then there's a whole section, quite a number of chapters in that work. And this is like around chapter 11, the Bardo Tugro. So, the Bardo Tugro, or Hearing Through Liberation, is centered mainly upon the dying process, the bardo of dharmata, which is after the respiration has stopped, and then the bardo of becoming, or moving on to one's next manifestation. And that's why it's called the Book of the Dead, or relating more to the death. But as many teachers have pointed out, it's not just about death. It's about life as well. And bardo meaning interval, or in between one state to another. We could say that every moment there's a bardo, a form of life and death taking place, arising and dissolution, arising, duration, dissolution, constantly going on. So the teachings are all geared towards us becoming more aware of this process. And what we hear often in the Tibetan Book of the Dead is pay attention, recognize what's happening. Pay attention, recognize, over and over again. So these are in direct alignment with the reason why meditation is so important in a daily life. Because when we do the two basic forms of meditation, like shamatha vipassana, calm abiding and insight. Calm abiding is non-distraction, training in being non-distracted. And then insight basically is learning how to recognize the essence of what occurs. So those two are in direct correspondence with the main subject matter of the Book of the Dead, Bardo Tugro. So when we do basic meditation practice, we become more sensitive to thoughts and emotions because we're in a nice environment. We can kind of really slow things down and check them out. And as thoughts arise, you can see them for what they are, and we're taught to just not react, not judge, but just observe them and let them go in Shine, or so you let them go. Again, we're training in letting go, which is ideal for transition and dying. That's what we really need to learn how to do. So what better method than to do basic calm abiding shamatha practice? And so that's why it's always emphasized that really, if we want to go deeper into dying properly, lucid dreaming, we have to practice now while we're awake first and foremost. So the word for practice in Tibetan is nyamlen. If you break it apart, it means take to experience. They have a nice new translation of nyamlen in another work, and it's called, now there, some translators are calling it experiential cultivation. That's typical English. You know, you have 8 syllables for a 2-syllable Tibetan word. Experiential cultivation, but it's a nice way to kind of clarify what that means. So the challenge for us is to, how do we make that leap from theory to experience? There's a great danger in our information age to be just flooded with information. Books, we have countless books. Go on the Google, and I went on Google yesterday, typed in dissolution of the elements. You know, all these experts, thousands of experts. Some of them are good, some are not so good, you know, really. But so we got no shortage of information. So what we have to do is individually challenge ourselves to say, okay, how can I make this a living experience, breathing experience? I mean, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, if you just look at it, it's like self-secret in a way. It's hard to understand for one thing, but it's also could be dry if you're not ready for it, if you don't really probe underneath the words. As the Buddha said, don't rely on the words, rely on the meaning. So again, you know, another Tibetan expression is the road from the head to the heart is the longest journey. That's what that means. It is to break through beyond theory, beyond intellect, to direct experience. That's the Dharma path. So in the introduction, okay, we have this work here. This was Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche's work, translated in 1975. Basically, he worked with Francesca Fremantle, who was the main translator, and he kind of helped her with that. And this was the work that Lama Sonaksang was aware of and kind of knew was fairly reliable, so he recommended us using this as our main source book.
There are more copies of it at Potomac Gate right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I forgot mine, but yeah, if anyone wants one.
Again, this is the Bardo Tudro. This is that one section. There's also this work, which is the complete translation of all. There's references in this book to sections in here, which is updated with a foreword by the Dalai Lama. This is quite excellent. Again, there's different renderings, different. So when you read it, if you were to read it out loud, it'd be quite different in this version, and the same with Evans Wendt's version. So in our lifetime, it's never going to be agreed upon one, you know, particular translation, like the Tibetans had one translation. They never had a problem with that. But it's interesting, Francesca Fremantle recently said she's kind of hoping we never do have a single version of Tibetan terms. Mm-hmm. She thinks it's a good thing mm-hmm. that we have all these different renderings. Mm-hmm. So it makes a question, continue to question, and what does it really mean behind that? So in the intro, Trungpa said, liberation, it's called liberation through hearing. So liberation in this case means that whoever comes into contact with his teaching, even in the form of doubt or with an open mind, receives a sudden glimpse of enlightenment contained in these treasures. There's also liberation through seeing, liberation through tasting, liberation through touching. All the sense fields. There's different ways, different special methods that have been brought out in order to provide this glimpse or connection with liberation. And then, so liberation, I guess one could say, it means waking up, a glimpse of wakefulness from the mesmerizing influence of samsara. And so in the complete work, there's a whole section on the six bardos, what are called the six bardos. The bardo of this life, the bardo of dreaming, the bardo of meditation, and then these three other bardos, the bardo of dying, the bardo of reality or dharmata, and the bardo of becoming. So we have six. And there are some really good books that have already been written recently on these six bardos. Like there's one called Natural Liberation by Gyaltsen Rinpoche and translated by Alan Wallace. And then Mind Beyond Death. Venerable Pumat Rinpoche's great book also. So that also came from this cycle of teachings, of Therma teachings. So the bardo of this life refers to the gap between one's incarnation, so to speak, one's birth to one's death, is that interval is the bardo of this life. And then the bardo of dream is falling asleep unconscious until one wakes up. That's the bardo of dream, basically, and quite simply put. And then the bardo of meditation is the gap between one thought, one concept, and the next. And the bardo of dying is once it is definite that the signs of death are taking place, the process, dissolution of the elements, and so forth, until all respiration has ceased, outer and inner respiration. And then the bardo of dharmata, and they call it dharmata because it's a hard word to translate. Chunyi in Tibetan. So they've come, most agree on reality. That's all they could basically part of reality. And then that phase is said to last between one manifestational or one form, corporal form, and the next. So in between there's a bardo body or a mental body where one wanders in the bardo. That's where that expression came from, wandering in the bardo. So as we know, bardo means more than just that. Wandering in this sort of unknown gap. And then comes the bardo becoming. So after a certain period of time, which we'll go into here, then one is drawn towards the next birth. Sometimes it's called the bardo of rebirth.
You define bardo?
Bardo? There are a number of definitions like intermediate state, interval, the gap between one and the next, one period and the next.
Thank you.
At the very beginning of the bardo tudril, there's a comment that says, remember what your teacher taught you. That's one of the first things that one says to the dying person. And on one hand, it means everything, you know, like all the teachings one has heard about nature of mind, meditation, so forth. But it also refers to a section in the actual bardo book, and that's called pointing out naked awareness. So basically, it's Guru Rinpoche giving pointing out instructions on the nature of mind, nature of Rigpa. So, and that's common also in pretty much all the schools of Tibetan Buddhism. They have this custom of pointing out where the master kind of points out the nature of mind. And they do it in different ways. There's like formal ways, there's informal ways. There's a story about one master who swung a bag of barley, hit the student on the head, and he got pointing out instructions that way. So, Kala Rinpoche, when he came to the West, he would always say in every teaching that your mind is empty, clear, and unimpeded, over and over again. Empty, clear, and unimpeded. Just really resonated what he said. And so that was his gentle way of sort of giving an introduction. That's another word they use, introducing the nature of mind. Sometimes they use that same word for pointing out. So it doesn't really mean that you become enlightened at that point. It just, again, it means you might have a glimpse, or you get get some kind of idea of what he's talking about, introducing. And then, ideally, after that, you have something to work with. So, instead of just groping in the dark. So, the reoccurring theme in the Tibetan Book of the Dead is luminosity and emptiness, over and over again. So, here we're challenged to explore what that means. We don't have to learn a ton of words. There's some really important special words. And luminosity and emptiness is one. In this work, the complete translation, they call luminosity, or they call clear light, which is another word for luminosity, they call it inner radiance. So you can see there's different ways to go about finding out what that means. So what Kala Rinpoche taught, he would often say that the mind's nature is luminous and open and empty. The luminous aspect of mind, when it's misapprehended or misunderstood, becomes all of the appearances, not just visual, but all the sensual stimuli of phenomena, which is perceived as outward or external from oneself. And then the empty nature of mind, when not realized, is posited as a separate self, separate consciousness that's inside. So there's this division. So that fundamental split is luminosity and emptiness, you could say. And so when we have a hard time relating to the imagery in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, one thing to always, it's always good to fall back and remember, is that that imagery is luminosity unleashed. You know, one's own luminous nature unleashed. But now it's carefully contained in our, because we have our bodies now. And so we have everything kind of in boxes and drawers and so, it's good to approach the Vajrayana and the Bardo Tudral with this notion of luminosity and emptiness, and also out of that luminosity arises rainbow-colored light, rainbow imagery. It's like you could say it's the first manifestation out of nothingness. It is some kind of rainbow imagery and movement. And this is, these are called the subtle elements. Subtle elements of, you know, air, wind, fire, water, and form. So, ultimately speaking, there's, even though now it appears like there's the phenomenal world which is out there, and then there's our bodies, and then there's our minds, that they're not, there's actually an interplay, interrelationship that's always taking place, constantly interdependent on all three, to the point where there really is no separation. From a yogi's point of view, there's no separation. So those five elements are said to be aspects of the five Buddha families, five awakened families, five wisdoms, related to the five wisdoms, as well as in Buddha psychology, they talk about what constitutes an ego or a self is the belief in one's individual makeup based upon the five skandhas, the five aggregates, which are... So if we study Buddhist psychology, we'll learn about those things. Five skandhas are the aspects of one's consciousness, like form, feeling, perception, conditioning, and consciousness. And this is what awareness gloms onto, posits itself to. And so the fundamental energy behind these processes is the five wisdoms. So we have the five elements, the five skandhas or aggregates, and the five wisdoms. These all correspond to the five Buddha families. Now we're getting technical here, but if we always remember that they come back, it comes back down to that basic luminous nature of mind. And then this is where all the imagery starts to start making more sense.
Would you please repeat the five wisdoms? What are
I never said.
The ones you said, the five elements, I guess.
The five skandhas?
Which
ones?
Air, wind, fire,
yeah.
Element,
water.
Or the element. The five elements.
Five elements? Are earth, water, fire, wind, and air. Five subtle elements, basic elements.
Okay, thank you.
When you mentioned that when misunderstood, the term emptiness leads to possibly that sense of separate consciousness. One can see where Evans Wentz drew his conclusion that true emptiness would involve universal consciousness or a consciousness of oneness, possibly. Mm. So we can't.
Sure.
We can't really chastise it too much.
No. I know it's like nitpicking in a way when it comes to words sometimes. Generally, in Buddhist teachings, consciousness is a four-letter word. I mean, it implies dualism. It's nitpicking because, you know, even among Buddhist schools, they get all huffy about the difference between mind and mindness, you know. So, no. That's where we don't want to fall into the scholar's trap. They say, whatever you do, don't end up on your deathbed a scholar. arguing over terms. But no, we should be grateful for Evans Wentz, right? Yeah, some lamas, when they came to the West in the 70s, they were shocked that everyone knew the Tibetan text. Because it's like one of the most esoteric texts. You know, why did that happen? Why did that happen first? You know? It just like seemed random. There was even a Beatles song influenced by Tibetan, right?
What song?
Relax Your Mind.
Yeah. Off of Revolver.
Revolver.
Tomorrow Never Knows.
Sorry. I don't want that on my deathbed.
So, east is east and west is west, and never the twain shall meet. Sometimes one might think that when reading this. Well, I don't know if I think it's possible. Uh, it was quite common, you know, in the Tibetan culture, when someone's dying, to invite lamas and monks to gather. The family would invite them, often would set up a tent. Sometimes it said they would spend a third of their entire wealth for the 49-day period to do ceremonies for the on behalf of their relative, their beloved relative. And so it was quite a happening. And there would be elaborate offerings, elaborate chanting, music. So when the Tibetans would do these types of practices, they would chant the Tibetan Book of the Dead along with other texts and prayers, and it would be chanted quite melodically and rhythmically. So it wasn't like, you know, like, oh, Sona. Now you are entering the bar. Like some of the documentaries. Vincent Price, you know. quite often it would be more like, you know, then there'd be some music. And maybe not in the Bartle Tudril, but there in the other sections in the Shitra purges there would be. So it was a mixture of many elements, and it was lively and festive, in, even in a way. You could say it was festive. We're talking about the 49-day period. We're not necessarily the dying, actual day of dying, but like a enlightened country fair. With the Dharma prevalent.
Pardon? Would it go all day long for 49
yeah.
days?
Or three times, maybe like 3 2-hour sessions a day, something like that. They would set up their intervals. They'd have breaks. You know.
Would they also read it as someone was dying before that?
Oh, yeah. But that would be a little different.
Okay.
You know, ideally, that would be more traditional, where you'd have the dying person's closest teacher, if possible. If not that, practitioner that they're really close to, or someone who has the same, someone they really trust, and then the person would, if it was a master, he could gauge exactly what's going on at a given time, like you know, earth dissolving in the water, water dissolving in the fire, those stages of dissolution, and then maybe do transference practice, if need be, if they were adept at doing that, poa, at a given, at a certain time, and then read sections from the Tibetan, from the Bardo Tudril. Either read them closely to the ear, or even just quietly chant it. But what's always emphasized is the presence of the, and the state of mind of those around the dying person. Important to be calm and warm-hearted. And even when they do the long 49-day pujas and so forth, the lamas and monks are always reminded again and again to pay attention. Because it's like, not, they have to pay attention as well to help the dying person. Consciousness. Because it's said that the consciousness is very sensitive and naked, and also with clairvoyance, so they can detect disruptions and so forth. So your commitment in partaking of this ceremony is very considered very seriously, to really focus and be and have really pure motives. And it's one of the biggest downfalls to think about, you know, how much money you're going to make off going, you know, to hopping around doing the death circuit. It's called, do not go past the bar to go directly to hell. You know. So the Bartle Tudro is divided up into three sections. The first is the Bartle of Dying, Chike Bartle. And in this one, in the book, it's a lot of general instructions, which are kind of sometimes might be confusing. Because it goes back, and it's not exactly in sequence the way it's presented the first part. So those who have the book, it starts on page 33.
Aren't there three editions of this?
Three editions?
Yeah, this is the second edition that.
Oh, okay.
You have. I thought there was even a later one. That
maybe
came.
So. Do they have different page numbers?
33.
Still 33.
Is this called the Bartle before the moment of death?
Yes, it's the same. Bartle dying. So it begins with the, you know, homage to the gurus, the three kayas, Amitabha, infinite light, the Dharmakaya, peaceful and restful lotus deities, the Sambhogakaya, Padme Sambhava, protector of beings, the Nirmanakaya. Three kayas also very important to learn the meaning behind, and quite succinctly and simply, like Kala Rinpoche said, the mind's nature is empty, clear, and unimpeded. So empty nature of mind is related to Dharmakaya, the clear or luminous nature is related to Sambhogakaya, and the unimpeded manifestation is the Nirmanakaya. So each one gets a little more manifest, starting from very subtle. So here, Amitabha is symbolizing the Dharmakaya. So we may see that these shift, Amitabha sometimes is regarded as Sambhogakaya, depending on the context. So one thing is Amitabha, infinite light, is also from the lotus family and regarded as the symbol of infinite benevolence and love. So that's another important point that permeates this whole Bartle teaching, is the infinite love of all the awakened ones or of enlightenment. And manifesting as the peaceful and wrathful lotus deities, in this case the Sambhogakaya. And then Padmasambhava, protector of beings in Nirmanakaya, who Padmasambhava is the source of these teachings. Okay, the great liberation through hearing, the means of liberation of Bartle for yogins of average capacities is in three parts. The introduction, the main subject matter, and the conclusion. Quite often in Tibetan text when it says higher capacities, average, beginners, usually I'm below the beginners stage. First of all, they say yogins. So yogins automatically assumes that you're probably familiar, if not always, but at least sometime in your life with 24/7 practice and experience.
some point. So, okay, I didn't mean to make it sound too elitist. It also says here that don't be surprised, even ordinary people may recognize the very first stage of luminosity. So always be aware that takes place sometimes. Okay, the first part is called the introduction. And one thing about this text is it's not clear on where the introduction of the main part takes over. So I'll try to point that out when it comes. So, first of all, one should have studied the instructions, which should certainly liberate those of the highest capacities. Okay, that's the first statement here. Study the instructions. And this means all the Dharma teachings that one has been exposed to, particularly the instructions that are earlier in this work, not in this text, but in the other, in the Bardo cycle. Pointing out naked awareness. So you can recognize that naked awareness in the Bardo of dying. The union of luminosity and emptiness. But if they do not, one should practice the ejection of consciousness. Now, a Tibetan Lama or any Lama master would be able to tell by signs whether or not they need ejection of consciousness. And there's a whole section earlier in the Tibetan book, in the Bardo teachings, the Shitra, Karling Shitra, on how to detect signs. There's a whole chapter on that. And it becomes really obvious to one who knows those signs whether or not the person needs further assistance that's dying. Most do. But if those signs aren't evident, if it looks, then one does the pola chance. If one is familiar and trained and adept at pola practice, then one would do the transference of consciousness practice.
And one would do, you're talking about the person who is accompanying the dying person or the person who's dying? The person.
Either or. If you had studied this text, then you would be thinking it for yourself. You knew you were dying. But it also refers to the Lama or so who's there at that given moment. And in the period, the sign of when it is to be done is when the external breathing has ceased. And then there's what is said to be the average time it takes to eat a meal, or 20 minutes, before the inner respiration completely ends. And during that gap is the most effective time to do pola for someone else. But they have to, they're always warned to make sure that the outer respiration is completely over with at that time. Again, there's different types of pola, and there's called like Dharmakaya pola and Sambhogakaya pola. Dharmakaya pola for the person who's dying just means they recognize ultimate truth, ultimate nature of mind, and they realize there's no going, there's no transference, there's nothing whatsoever that needs to be done. That's called ultimate transference. There's nobody going anywhere from point A to point B. But from a relative point of view, then if that hasn't been realized, then one does some Sambhogakaya pola. And that's the classic injection of consciousness through the crown of one's head up into the heart of whatever Pure Land or Yidam one is. So this is where it gets a little esoteric. But it's highly encouraged to learn about Poa in these teachings. Again, if this is done at the right time by the right master, there will be signs. There's like outer signs, environmental signs. If those signs are understood, that it was successful, then they say the reading of the Tibetan Book of the Dead is not necessary. This should certainly liberate yogins of average capacities, but if it does not, one should strive in the great liberation through hearing in the Vardo and Dharmata. Therefore, the yogin should first examine the sequence of the signs of death according to the spontaneous liberation of the signs of death. That's an actual chapter, that's earlier in the work. Examining the signs of death, the natural liberation of the signs of death. If the body is not present, one should sit on the dead person's bed or seat and, proclaiming the power of truth, call on his consciousness and read, imagining him sitting in the front, listening. At this time, sounds of crying and weeping are not good, so his relatives should be shut out. If the body is present, shut out. If the body is present, then during the interval between the ceasing of the breath and the ceasing of pulsation in the arteries, his guru or a Dharma brother, whom he loved and trusted, should read the great liberation through hearing close to his ear. Okay, that ends the introduction. So,
ejection of consciousness is not synonymous with transference of consciousness, correct?
It is synonymous.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's just another translation. Oh.
And you said then something through the crown chakra to the heart of something, and I missed that.
In practice life, there's a lot of different Poa practices. In one, for example, you visualize Amitabha above one's head, and you visualize your consciousness as a sphere of light. It shoots up your central channel and up through the top of your head into the heart of Amitabha.
Oh, thank you. That was...
But it has to be motivated by trust and devotion and love, bodhicitta and so forth. And of course, it helps to have previous training, working with channels.
Is it always Amitabha? I mean, like if someone's practice is chinrezi, it's still Amitabha that's, when someone does Poa 40%.
Sure, there probably is a Chenrezi version of it, but I've never seen it. I've seen Amitabha versions, and there's a Chit version. There's a variety. Sometimes it's just emptiness, too.
So, and this sounds stupid, but are we to assume that any sensory disabilities the person had up to death are are gone when we're whispering or reading into the dead person's ear?
Yeah. It said that the teachings say that everything comes back clearly. One has clear perception.
What's the beginning of the question?
If one was impaired
sensory
in life, would they still, for example, could they hear if they were deaf when inside the
Lama Sonam, do you do POA for people and attend deaths?
That was going to be a disclaimer. I was going to.
So the answer.
I haven't done POA, and I have not even read the Tibetan Book of the Dead to a dying person.
What about
Rajama? I wasn't there. I did other practices. But not to
we did read.
Yeah, Kathleen Howard did.
And you did. Did you read to them as well?
Yeah.
Well, no. Not before.
But not during the time he was still alive?
No. Afterwards.
They have what they call essential poem, or where you visualize. You kind of just visualize the consciousness of the dying person, and you visualize that their consciousness shoots up. Just sort of meant as a meditation. You know, I've done that quite a few times. I don't feel comfortable doing the dramatic poem yet.
Does Lama do that for people?
Yeah.
Lama did a CD for us of him chanting the Bardo.
That's right. There was.
It's quite clear.
So would it be acceptable to play that?
Yes.
For someone?
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, you know, it's also said that a bardo being can understand any language. You know, this is takes a leap of faith. So that's in Tibetan. And you would think, someone who never knew Tibetan in their life would not have a clue what being said. So this falls under the category of, they have three types of verification of validity in Buddhism. And one is through direct experience. Second one is through logical reasoning and inferential reasoning, like where there's smoke, there's fire. And then the third type is, and I can't remember the Tibetan name, I'll try to bring that next time, but it's basically trusting the source. And it's not, the scientists would dismiss that, but because it's not a priori or whatever. So the source in this case is Guru Rinpoche and countless other lamas like the Dalai Lama and so forth. At some point you just start to rely on what they're saying. If they say so many other things that are so valid and true through their own experience, and then they say something that is like kind of strange, and you think, Guru Rinpoche said it, the Buddha Shakyamuni said it, they said some amazing things about it. I think I'm going to go trust that source. So this is one of those things, bardo beings understand all language. Or is there even a bardo? Is there any afterlife? How do we know that? Who's come back and talked about it? That's the standard line.
The Tibetans have lots of people
have
come
back. Yeah, exactly. Maybe people look for it, maybe there have been people. Maybe there are signs.
Well, language may have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
I mean, understanding in the sense of, given this is true, let's say, I'll be the skeptic. Given this is true, language as we know it may not even be an issue, or the issue, or any issue. It's language, it's material, it's relative. We're talking about something else here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But read to me in English, please.
We're not in that bardo yet.
With the Leonard Cohen voice.
Wow.
If anyone needs to go to the bathroom, please feel free to.
Can you open my window a little? Very close.
Anybody mind the window open a little more?
He said no need to do that.